Good afternoon. Excuse me. Good morning, everyone. The meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of April 21st before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Any corrections, additions, or changes to the minutes? See none. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have a small amendment to the budget resolution we're going to take up. And we'll take up Representative Hoppe's bill, Representative Anderson, Keel, and finally Representative Erdahl. Members, I would move the A2 amendment to the budget resolution. Members, what this does is it basically sets a limit of $1 million that can be taken from the MinCorps revolving fund in the budget resolution. That is what is in the public safety bill right now at the current time, and so it would set that limit. Is there any discussion to the A2 amendment? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I assume then that that million has already been used in the bill from earlier.
It has.
And I did express a little concern about the budget resolution generally last time that it does prevent.
That's the only reason it came up.
Majority and after we vote on this, I do have a question about another item. Budget resolution while it's before us.
Sure. All right. Any other discussion of the A2 amendment? See no further discussion. All in favor of the A2 budget resolution amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
So
motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Carlson.
You know, there's more and more comments as we get closer to the end of the session about a bonding bill and what the size would be. And, you know, the budget resolution that was passed earlier provided for a $600 million bonding bill. And I'm just curious, as you know, last year I raised questions several times about the size of a potential bonding bill and if there's going to be an opportunity to have perhaps the budget resolution before us again so that we could probably have a bonding bill that would be larger than the one that you're providing for in the current budget resolution. And part of the reason I say that, and again for both sides of the aisle, first of all, I think there's a target of opportunity, and I don't want to get heavily into bonding right now, but being that the budget resolution is here, when you go in to negotiate with the Senate and you come in with an artificially low bonding bill, assuming that you do pass one, that really puts both the majority and the minority at a disadvantage, because it, under House rules, if we do it the traditional way, then you end up working off the Senate list. And it's my understanding that they're going to have a bill at least as large as the governor's and perhaps larger. So when those negotiations take place, then those of us in both House caucuses are at a disadvantage when it comes to advocating or having a project that we might want included if the bill was a little bit larger than the $600 million you're providing for. So basically my question is, will we see the budget resolution before us again, do you think, to take a look at the future of a bonding bill?
I guess, Representative Carlson, I really haven't heard those concerns that you just raised yourself from people in general. You know, I guess at this point we have a $600 million bonding bill, and I suppose it's always possible that there will be other amendments that come up, but we haven't had any discussion about having anything other than a $600 million bonding bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would hope that you'd take another look at that, just for the very reason that I cite, that so that people on my side of the aisle as well as yours can advocate for projects that are important that might not fit in a $600 million bonding bill. But thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right. Members, first let's take up House File 3211. Chair will move that House File 3211 be referred to the General Register. Representative Hoppe, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 3211 deals with advanced deposit wagering. That is something that's already currently going on in Minnesota. It's not illegal. We've never, strictly speaking, made it legal. And this bill is an attempt to do that, to have it licensed in Minnesota and have it benefit Minnesota racing industry. And essentially what it allows people to do is to deposit money ahead of time that they can use to bet on different horse races. And instead of all of the money going to entities outside of Minnesota, we would like to capture some of that revenue. The reason I'm here is there is a fiscal note attached to it, which I think you all have in front of you. And I believe the number is $27,000. And that money would be generated. What the Racing Commission would like to do is, when there are fines levied under this on any of the entities that get fined in Minnesota, instead of having that money, as it currently does, go to the general register, they'd like to have it go into a separate, specific, dedicated fund that would care for retired and injured racehorses. And that, in essence, is why I'm here.
Questions for Representative Hoppe? Representative Pond.
Just a question. Is the place to take care of retired and injured racehorses in this state?
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I believe so, but I will double check and get back to you. And I was going to follow up with you anyhow, because you and I have had conversations in the past about the care of racehorses. And just for the record, and I've said this to Representative Kahn in the past, the state of Minnesota and our racing industry here, from everything I know, does a better job of taking care of racehorses than any other racing facility in the country.
Representative Kahn.
Just was a question.
All right. I wanted another question. Sorry.
No. Okay. Just wanted to know if they went out of state or if they stayed here.
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I think that most of them stay here, but I don't think there's anything in law that prohibits them from being sold to somebody in Wisconsin or somewhere else. I will find out from the folks at either Canterbury or Running Aces or the Racing Commission and get back to you.
Other discussion to House File 3211. Seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion that House File 3211 be referred to the general register. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 3211 is referred to the general register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Kahn, I will get back to you.
Next up, we have House File 3469, Representative Anderson. Anderson P. The chair will move that House File 3469 be referred to the general register. And members, I thought we had a technical amendment to this. While we're checking for that, Representative Anderson, welcome to the Ways and Means Committee. Why don't you tell us about your bill?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And members, the amendment is the A1 amendment that has to do with a fiscal note attached to the bill.
Oh, okay. Members, it is the A1 amendment. I've got a copy of it now. It's in the 3829 packet. Sorry about that. So if you can find the A1 amendment in the 3829 packet. And the chair will move the A1 amendment. Representative Anderson, why don't you tell us what the amendment does?
Mr. Chair, the result of this bill, if it were enacted, would be a fiscal note from revenue and management budget saying that there'd be one additional prisoner per year added to the state prison system with a cost of about $13,000 per year. So that's the result of the fiscal note for this bill.
Okay. And Mr. Marks, did you want to comment on that?
Mr. Chair, members, I can just mention that on the fiscal note, if you look on page 9, the Department of Corrections states their assumptions as far as bed impact. This is basically bed impact costs that they're showing in here, the assumptions that they make. And under the assumptions, the sentence is the year-by-year estimated prison bed impact is one bed in fiscal 17, two beds in fiscal 18, and three beds in fiscal 19 in each subsequent year.
Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson, please present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3469, or we're calling it Laura's Law, would result in the increase in criminal penalties for interfering with the body or scene of death with the intent to conceal a body, conceal evidence, or otherwise mislead the coroner or medical examiner. This is a result of a tragic incident that occurred back in Douglas County last fall. A young woman who was from my hometown, 18-year-old Laura Schwendeman, disappeared on the evening of October 14th, last seen on security camera footage at a gas station in Alexandria. Her body was finally discovered 12 days later by a farmer operating his combine in a cornfield. The person who put Laura there went the entire 12 days withholding the truth of what happened from law enforcement, with the result being what I can only guess to be 12 days of pure hell for her family and friends, with the result being a massive search for her body, including a sheriff's department, many volunteers and friends, along with a helicopter and an airplane searching for her. The defendant in the case never confessed to how or where he put Laura's body until after she was found. And when he finally did confess, he told of the two of them driving around that night. They were doing methamphetamines. And when Laura became unresponsive, he stopped in the country alongside a cornfield, picked her up out of the car, and carried her out to 18 rows in the cornfield and just dropped her off, left her there. When the case finally went to trial, the only charge available to the county attorney was that of concealing a body, which is a gross misdemeanor. The family, along with the folks throughout the area, were basically shocked at the lack of severity of the charge. After what he had done with Laura's body, after what he had put her family through for those 12 days, after lying to law enforcement all that time, his sentence was 365 days in jail with time off for good behavior. It thought he could be released after just a couple of months from the sentence. Doing some research, other states have looked at this the situation. Four states, Wisconsin, Arizona, Oklahoma, and New York have made this a felony crime. And a fifth state, Colorado, is currently looking at legislation that would do so as well. And one fact to consider, when the suspect was in jail during the search, he threw his dinner tray at a window in the jail cell. The window broke, and because of the damage amount, that's a felony. But what he did to Laura's body is not. Laura's family is asking that this crime be increased to a felony. It'll help give them closure with losing their daughter and sister and friend. The county attorney also expressed the thought that had this been a felony at the time that this happened, it may have helped during his questioning that if he hadn't come clean and confessed to what he had done, he could have been charged at the time with a felony. It may have helped. We don't know for sure. But that, Mr. Chair and committees, is the reason for this bill, and I would stand for questions.
Questions for Representative Anderson. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I mean, first of all, what a terrible situation. I mean, these kinds of things are just awful. I really feel for the family on this. And, you know, of course, we're in a terrible situation in the state and across the country with trying to tackle the deaths from drugs. I mean, that's, you know, that even goes kind of outside your bill, but it's related to it. But my question to you is, was this guy actually convicted of concealing evidence? Because it sounds to me from the description that you gave that she was actually alive or may have been alive when he put the body in the cornfield. And that, to me, does not sound like it would actually even fit under this bill that you're bringing. Or I guess the current statute is not that different other than the penalty. So was he actually convicted of concealing evidence?
Representative Anderson.
Yeah, that's what the conviction was for, and more details. The autopsy came back and couldn't determine an exact cause of death. And there is a third-degree murder charge for one providing drugs to another. But if people are doing drugs together, that doesn't fit. So in this case, again, the only charges available were this lying to the of authorities and concealing the body.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson. I mean, I totally get where you're trying to go with this, and I totally understand the family's desire to have some, you know, often when people suffer these kinds of tragedies, we see this a lot, that they come to the legislature wanting us to change the law in some way because I think people feel that if they can turn their tragedy into something good that helps somebody else, that gives a little bit of meaning to what they've had to go through. And so I totally understand that, and I'm sympathetic to it. But, I mean, it really sounds to me like this wouldn't fit the situation that you're talking about because, I don't know, if in fact this had been a felony at the time, I bet you that guy and his lawyer would have fought a lot harder to avoid conviction at all because I don't think it really fits here. You have to prove each of the elements of a crime beyond a reasonable doubt. And if there was doubt about whether the young woman was alive at the time he put her in the cornfield, I don't know how you'd go beyond a reasonable doubt that he was concealing a body. Mm-hmm. He was, in fact, in my mind, doing something a whole lot worse if she could have been saved at that point. So, I'm not saying I oppose the bill, but I do get concerned when we continually up penalties for things. And we do suffer in many ways as a state by sometimes over-criminalizing things, and I just would like to be sort of assured that this actually helps, because it really does sound to me like in this situation it might not have helped to have this in place.
Okay, I have Representative Anderson and then Cornish and Erdahl. Representative Anderson.
Well, this language came from the Douglas County Attorney, so in his opinion this would have addressed the situation. And in my non-expert opinion, again, being they couldn't establish the cause of death, and nobody will ever know she was dead when he put her there. I mean, that's a question that's going to haunt the family forever. So I'm not so sure that's the issue here. The issue was that he put a body in a cornfield, and over time in the fall when corn ripens, you have leaves that fall and the corn plants dry, and she may have been, I don't know, partially covered by vegetation. And it's just lucky that the farmer happened to see her as he came along with his combine. So I think this does address what happened in this case.
Representative Cornish.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, it came through committee. It was very popular. It's a good bill, and the one that crafted it was the county attorney, and if he should know if it fits the situation or not. That's my only comment.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, from my non-expert opinion, that this takes care of the situation that's well-drafted. But even if it didn't, it could address similar cases in the future where they might be able to make more definite determinations. So it isn't necessarily just about this, but about what happens in the future.
Other discussion to the bill? Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3469, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 3469, as amended, is referred to the General Register.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Is Representative Keel in the audience? There she is. Okay, so welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means, Representative Keel. Members, we have Senate File 2760, the counterpart to House File 3401, which is authored by Representative Keel, and Senate File 2760 was just referred to the committee. So I'm going to move that Senate File 2760 be referred to the General Register. And members, then I'm going to move that the language of House File 3401 be substituted into the language or deleted, that it replace the language of Senate File 2760. Is there any discussion to that motion to basically replace the Senate language with the House language? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are there, to your knowledge or maybe to the author, substantive differences in the bills, or are there differences in terms of doing switching the House language to the Senate language?
Let me ask the author of the bill to answer that. I believe there are a few differences, but not many. Representative Keel, can you answer that question of Representative Hornstein's?
Thank you, members. Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, there are just a few differences. We are going to amend a few onto my bill today, as you mentioned. And then, you know, maybe I will ask Ms. Lewis to define the differences.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kathy Lewis, Lands and Minerals, DNR. There are several differences between the two bills. In Beltrami County, there have been five parcels on Star Island that have been removed on the Senate side, and they are still in the bill on the House side, and DNR is recommending removal. There's on the House side, there's some tax forfeited property in Chisago County. There was never a separate bill in the Senate, and it's not in the Senate lands bill. Kitson County has some tax forfeited property. It's included in the House bill. It's not in the Senate bill. Murray County was a late bill coming in, and it is being included in the A3 amendment today on the House side. It's not on the Senate side. Wabasha County is in the Senate bill for tax forfeited lands. It's being included in the A3 amendment today for the House side. The Klondike Water Project was amended into the Senate bill yesterday, and it's going to be in the A3 amendment today for the House bill. There's two sections that concern wild rice leases held by the DNR that are in the Senate bill that are not in the House bill. And then deletion of 240s from Zippo Bay State Park are in the House bill but not in the Senate bill.
Thank you. Any other discussion to the motion to substitute the language of House File 3401 into the Senate bill? Representative Hornstein.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess it seems, and maybe this will have to be worked out in Commerce Committee, it seemed like that there were a couple of things that the DNR had in the Senate bill that aren't in the House bill, so I guess we'll have to I'd like to learn more about those and figure out what's going on at some point.
Yeah, you know, and I guess I appreciate your concern, Representative Hornstein. I guess I figured we've got the House file, and Seems like there's always a few differences in the lands bill, and it would just be a conference committee kind of an item.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right, seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the motion to substitute the House file 3401 language for the Senate language, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? No. Motion prevails. The language is substituted. Members, then we have the A3 amendment. Chair will move the A3 amendment. Representative Keel, can you speak to the A3 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And once again, I am going to let Ms. Lewis explain the A3 amendment and the detail.
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, members, the first amendment for an A3 is for the Klondike Clean Water Retention Project in Kitson County. And this section includes provisions for a land exchange and potential land sale or alternative by the DNR. And the DNR has worked with a watershed district with the language, and we're comfortable with it. The provision on 2.112 is a public sale of tax forfeited land in Murray County. It's a 12-acre parcel. The DNR has reviewed the property. We have no concerns for having that in the bill. It just came in late in the process. And then the Section 51, which is on 2.25, is about a 4-acre parcel in Wabasha County near Lake City. And the DNR has reviewed the parcel, has no concerns. And it's also one that came in a little bit later in the legislative process.
Representative Wagenius to the A3 amendment.
Just looking at the language on line 1.22, and apparently there is a wildlife management area that is currently in what's going to be this water retention project. And so we're getting rid of the wildlife management area. Am I getting that right?
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, what we're doing is looking at that issue and working with the watershed district. What they, well, we don't necessarily need to get rid of the wildlife management area. In fact, we don't actually have to do necessarily a sale. And that's why this language is here, that we will look at the issue of whether we can just allow the activity to be occurring on the property without changing ownership of the property. And that's one of our possibilities. And so we need to still look at that.
Representative Wagenius.
If I could follow up on that. Where did the money, in case there is a sale, where did the money come from to get this wildlife management area?
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, I don't have that detail where it came from specifically on this particular wildlife management area. I don't know if there's anybody in the audience that knows that answer.
Mr. Chair.
We have someone coming forward. Representative Wagenius, did you have a question while he's coming forward?
Well, it's my basic question is if this is sold, and maybe it came from legacy money, wherever, how is that fund reimbursed? That's where I'm going with this.
Sure. Okay. Welcome to our Ways and Means Committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Harnick with the Red River Watershed Management Board, and Representative Wagenius' question. This is considered to be acquired WMA land, which means there has been some federal funds that have been used to acquire this, and the disposition of this land will take that into consideration as we work with DNR and look at the options for its disposition once the environmental assessment is completed for the project.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, it just seems to me, looking out for the taxpayers, that this language should have, now that I understand what's going on here, should have included some language about reimbursement if the land is sold, and maybe it is not going to be sold, but so that's a worry here.
Okay. Mr. Harnick, can you comment on that more? And I don't know if there's anything else in statute that applies to a situation if it is sold.
Mr. Chairman, a lot depends upon, as we go through the environmental assessment, we'll be looking at the options for the management of the retention area and the utilization of this state land, which also had federal funds into it. And if it's determined that we're going to be able to manage this to enhance that WMA as part of the impoundment and retention management, then there will not need to be an exchange. However, if DNR and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service feels that there will be some detriments to it, then there will have to be some exchange or acquisition of the land, and we'll deal with that accordingly. The EAW should spell that all out with all the participants being involved in the discussion.
Other discussion to the A3 amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. Representative Keel, please present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you know, legislative approval is needed for certain land management transactions that aid the DNR in meeting its conservation agenda and goals. And with that, I'm going to refer to Kathy Lewis to explain the detail of this bill.
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, would you like a comprehensive detail, or would you like just the fiscal highlights?
I think, why don't you talk about the fiscal items?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the Omnibus Lands Bill. It's a combination of 15 bills, and it covers certain DNR lands, tax forfeited lands, and has a county fee land parcel. On the state side, the fiscal impact is the sale of DNR lands, and there's 267 acres being authorized for sale. Of that, 242 will actually be conveyed to counties. Our estimated revenue from the DNR sales is $307,000, and that part of it goes to the general fund, and most of it goes to the land acquisition account, which the commissioner may use to purchase other lands within the outdoor recreation system. The largest fiscal impact is from the sale of tax forfeited lands that have been added to the bill, And there's about 628 acres of tax forfeited lands in the bill. It's an estimated value of $3.2 million. The counties will not actually sell all of those lands. They'll see if they can find buyers. But that revenue goes back to the local communities, and it's a very worthwhile and appreciated effort on the part of the legislature to provide this revenue opportunities back to the counties.
Questions for Representative Kuehl or Ms. Lewis? I guess just one question I had that I talked about before, Representative Kuehl. Presuming that everything goes through in this bill as expected, will the state own more land or less land when all is done?
My understanding is less, Ms. Lewis.
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, the state will own less land as a result of this bill.
Okay. Other questions or discussion on the bill? Representative Carlson.
I'm trying to follow here the school trust land portions of the exchange or sale. Are those school trust lands being sold, or are they being exchanged for other lands?
Ms.
We've
Lewis?
Done both historically.
Mr. Chair, the land sales are not school trust lands. There is a land exchange in St. Louis County that's about 10 acres. We'd be exchanging school trust land that's riparian for non-school trust land, which would be forestry land. And that's the main provision on the sales for the DNR lands. There's also been incorporated into the bill a change in the expedited land exchange law, and that incorporates school trust land into the provisions of the bill so that they can do expedited land exchanges with local units of government for school trust lands.
So, Representative Carlson.
When the exchange is complete, then will the exchange be of equal value?
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's a requirement in the land exchange laws that it's value for value. It's not acre for acre in land exchanges, it's value for value. And school trust land, you have to exchange at least equal or greater value for when you do a land exchange of school trust lands.
Yeah, Mr. Carlson. Chair, when I chaired the Education Committee, there was a joint commission at the time, and sometimes that was a bit of a debatable point, though, as to whether that was a real, true exchange relative to value. But that's what's in the law, and that's what the goal is, at least. So thank you.
Other questions? Seeing none, all in favor of Senate File 2760 as amended being referred to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senate File 2760 as amended is referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Exactly.
Representative Erdahl moves that House File 3829 be referred to the General Register. And
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Erdahl.
It has to go to rules, I think, first.
Oh. I'm told it's going to be automatically grabbed. Okay, I'm told by counsel that, in fact, we should refer it to the General Register, and then they will take it from there.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Nope. Thanks for bringing it up. Representative Erdahl, there's one amendment that I think is a technical amendment, and then there's one that is a more substantive amendment. And so I'm wondering if what we should do is adopt the technical amendment and then have you present the bill and then deal with the more substantive amendment.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right. Well, the technical amendment is the A-16 amendment. Representative Erdahl moves the A-16 amendment. Can you explain that one, Representative Erdahl?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. In reviewing the legislative auditor's recommendations of a couple of years ago, we noticed that there was one area that had not been addressed in his recommendations, and that dealt with
the issue of supplanting and supplementing, which is an issue that we've been going over for 8 years and probably will the rest of the time. But we wanted to at least have some recommendation in statute that could be referred to in the future, and we decided through working with Mr. Nobles that we should look back and or entities receiving money should determine how they received the money in the past and use that as a guide. And so we put in the bill same and or similar programs. Well, the word similar created quite a bit of heartburn for various entities and how to determine what is similar, what is not similar. And so what we are doing with this amendment is just removing the similar provision and leaving the same provision.
Okay. Any discussion of the A16 amendment? See no discussion. Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A16 amendment is adopted. Okay. Representative Erdahl, why don't you present the bill, and then, like I said, well, I think then at that point, once we've got a good understanding of the bill, we can go to the other amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 3829 is the outdoor heritage portion of the legacy bill. This is an annual appropriation, whereas the other three categories are biennial. And this bill then also contains the OLA recommendation that I just dealt with. This is the eighth year of outdoor heritage funding, and the council originally recommended 40 proposals for $115 million, but then with the shortfall in the February forecast for sales tax revenue, it has been cut back to $177,000. Majority of the funding for land acquisition, 76%, or $80,370,000. Approximately 43% fee acquisition, 33% easement acquisition. PILT obligations from fee acquisition are estimated to be $171,254, based on an estimated value of PILT lands being $22,833,900. There were two changes made from the original Lessard-Sams Council recommendations, one dealing with the White Earth land acquisition, and the other with a reduction in Minnesota Deer Hunter Association funding. And I think that with that brief introduction, I will turn to the director of the Lessard-Sams Council, Mr. Mark Johnson, and he can go into some of the details of the bill.
Mr. Johnson, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, Mark Johnson. I'm the Executive Director for the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. Chairman Erdahl has done a very good job of giving you an overview of the bill. If I may, I'll just let you know of the different categories within the bill. And that is that, actually, I believe you have a handout that came to you also that on the back is a listing of the different projects within the bill for the outdoor heritage. There are four different segments or four different biomes with which all the funding is recommended: prairie, forest, wetlands, and habitats. The first of those, the prairies, there are 11 projects for $31 million, and that's always has been and continues to be the bulk of the projects that go out is because of the, of course, that imperiled area. The forests area is biome. There are 10 projects totaling just over $20 million. Within the wetlands portion, there are 6 projects totaling a little over $31 million. And habitats is an area that's not individually one of the previous, so it could be a combination, but it's 11 projects for $31 million. Administratively, there's $275,000 put into this bill into our final area. The council, as it looks at these recommendations, tries to do very much its due diligence in looking at what is best biologically, where is the best money, where can the money be placed to give the best results, and hopefully they've accomplished that. We feel they have. At the chair's discretion, we'll stand for questions.
Questions for Mr. Johnson. Representative Kahn, sorry.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, could you say something about the White Earth Project, which was recommended by the commission and then removed by the Environment Committee?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, the yes, that actually is, let me see if I can get it right in my listing here.
It was in the Potlatch Lands up.
Yes. It should be a project. It's in it. It's three, I thought it was F, and I may be wrong. Here it is. It's 3J within the listing. This is the second year in a row that project has come to the council. Last year it was removed from the bill. The council each year and this year again debated the bill at large. It's biologically, it's a very good project. It's looking at a very heavy rice, wild rice producing watershed, and some waters up in there in the Clearwater County, I believe it is. The council's I'm hesitant to go into too much of the deliberations that the council had in it. In the end, the council, it takes a supermajority of votes from the council, 9 votes at least of the 12 council, to pass the recommendations bill. And in the end, there was a 9-3 vote by the council to pass these recommendations that came forward. And that was one of the bills with one of the recommendations for appropriation within that. As I mentioned, I don't think anybody disagrees that it's biologically a good project. There are just some other considerations, as I understand, depending on where the land should go or who should own the land. I hope I've answered your question, ma'am.
Representative Kahn.
You know, the reason I take an extended interest in this is that the one time I made a different decision from the Lesard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Commission, I got totally trashed by all kinds of people, including, I think, a world record 9 columns from Dennis Anderson trashing me. And somehow, when it seems to be done now, no one seems to object strenuously enough. So it's just, I'm just interested in the different attitude. You know, I know you have a much more agreeable and much more trustworthy chair this time, but it's still a little offensive.
Perhaps Representative Erdahl?
Ms. Chair. Well,
am I a trustworthy and agreeable chair?
I think she was talking about you.
Oh,
yeah. But I think perhaps, Representative Kahn, you set the precedent, and that's why it's easier to try to make changes in the future.
Representative Kahn.
It was kind of a strange precedent because it wasn't, you know, the change was made, and then the next year, this was for the, it's interesting because, you know, it's hard to think there is an element of racism when these things always seem to deal with Indian acquisitions or Indian projects. That was with Fond du Lac, and the next year, it just kind of went through without anyone objecting to it, and of course, all my colleagues sort of sat on me to make sure that I didn't get up and say, see, I got my way after all, but I didn't. But this time it's kind of interesting to see that that didn't work.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kahn, I just want to assure you that it, certainly from my standpoint, and I would assume from others involved, this is not an element of racism at all, but a desire to do things the way it is conceived to be proper for the future in terms of how land is bought and exchanged in this bill.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Again, Mr. Chairman, I tend to, instead of listening to what people say, I tend to look at the evidence, and we have lots of land that is not owned by the state, that is owned by private entities, and it's just kind of weird that the two projects that have run into this kind of trouble are both things that have to do with tribes. And so it's hard for me to say that there's an element of anti-tribal sentiment in doing it.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Johnson, I'm looking on your handout for the
expenditures on lines 47, 50, and 51. Principally with regard to 50 and 51, I see money dedicated towards cold water fish habitat, but on the very next line it talks about DNR stream habitat, and I'm just wondering if there's a plurality there, what if you could delineate the difference between those two lines for me.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, so you're looking at, sir, the delineation between, or the difference between 50 and 51 particularly?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually, those allocations or those recommendations for allocation, one is the line 50 is actually referring to one that goes to Minnesota Trout Unlimited, and they're working strictly within cold water fisheries, cold water streams, so primarily trout streams. The following one, line 51, is the DNR stream habitat, and that deals with, it's a DNR appropriation within their fisheries division, and that actually deals with warm water fisheries primarily. They may have some cold water fisheries as well, some cold water streams, but otherwise it's non-cold water streams or warmer water, so it could be the St. Louis River estuary, it could be other areas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, seeing no further discussion, let's go to the A-17 amendment. Representative Williams moves the A-17 amendment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a fairly straightforward. The language on line 1.4 says land acquired in fee or restored and or enhanced with money appropriated in this section shall not be planted or otherwise treated with a product that contains a pollinator lethal insecticide. And the reason I'm doing that is we look at the Constitution that provides the money for that is being spent here. The Constitution says that the money in the Outdoor Heritage Fund may be spent only to restore, protect, enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. So the operative words are protect and wildlife. And since pollinator lethal will not protect wildlife, I think the amendment is appropriate, and I would ask for a roll call.
All right. Representative Green moves to the A-17 amendment. Request a roll call. Discussion of the A-17 amendment. No discussion to the A-17 amendment. Seeing no discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the A-17 amendment.
Albright?
No.
Anderson? Carlson?
Aye.
Cornish?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dean? Detmer?
No.
Draskowski? Garofalo? Gunther?
No.
Eckberth?
No.
Hamilton. Hillstrom.
Aye.
Weinstein.
Yes.
Kahn.
Yes.
Liebling. Loon.
No.
Mahoney. McNamara.
No.
Murphy. Nornis.
No.
Pulowski. Poppy. Torkelson.
No.
Riddle.
No.
Beginius.
Yes.
Namblock.
Yes.
Oh, no, this is the last bill. There being 6 ayes and 11 nays, the A-17 amendment is not adopted. Discussion of the bill. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of House File 3829 as amended being referred to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 3829 as amended is referred to the General Register. Members, seeing no other business come before the committee, the meeting is adjourned.